You're listening to Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG. We're online at kpcg.fm, and we have a live link also at thetrumpet.com. This is Trumpet Radio Live. Today is Wednesday. It's the 3rd of August. Dwight Falk, Abraham Blondeau with you here today. And a lot to talk about in today's program. Lots going on in the news. We'll talk about some of the headlines. Also preview the Key of David program and the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. And Grant Turgeon will be stopping by. Interesting story that he has for us. And then we'll also take a look at some of the things that have happened on this day in history as well. So a lot to do today. It is getting to be back to school time for students. And some schools have already started, even in the Edmond, Oklahoma City area. And, of course, I suppose different places around the country and the world have different times that they go back to school. Of course, if you're down the other part of the world, Australia, New Zealand, you're looking forward to summer break.
Right.
It's the opposite. And we have listeners at kpcg.fm down there. So they're flip-flopped from us, and we're flip-flopped from them. But it's kind of interesting. There's some statistics here about back to school. And they say families with school-aged children spent an average of $688.62 on apparel, shoes, supplies, and electronics in 2012. The last year, I guess, I had numbers for. So, Abraham, you don't have any children yet, but when you do, get ready to spend some bucks.
Right. Actually, I went to a Walmart last night to buy a shower curtain because the place I moved in didn't have one. I realized that I would need one very quickly.
Always important.
Yes. Yeah. So I went and grabbed one, and as I was walking through the store, they had the huge back-to-school things out there, and walking past all the parents, the kids, watching the kids try to grab all the different things, and then you have older students picking out very carefully the zipper binder they want and everything. Just made me thankful I graduated to the next tier of life, I guess, which is after school and college, but also realized that when you have kids, it's quite the procedure.
There's that brief window of life where you don't have to pay for your own school supplies anymore, and just before you have to pay for somebody else's.
Yeah.
They say 2.4% of children are considered to have, this is a really tough word, didaskalinophobia. I'm sure that wasn't right. But that's the fear of going to school. 2.4%. That seems a little low. Yeah, maybe that's those that are considered to have it as an ongoing, issue. I think everyone's always a little nervous and excited on the first day. But 2.4% have this really serious fear of going to school.
Yeah, I guess there might be, they might make a distinction between kids fearful to go to school and kids that don't want to go to school.
Right. Yeah, the other 97.6% just don't want to go.
Yeah.
Sometimes. This is interesting. Before there was the eraser, bread was used to erase mistakes.
Huh.
I didn't know that. I guess. I mean, I guess they're talking about, well, I don't know. I don't know if they're talking about, I guess my first thought was like a chalkboard, but that probably is not what they mean. They probably mean pencil. I'll have to try that. See if I can erase pencil lead with bread.
Yeah, I'm a little scared to eat the bread now.
Yeah, don't eat it. Don't you have lead poisoning.
But yeah, that's odd, I guess. School lunches had dual purposes back then.
Yeah.
So.
Now eat your erasers. Crayola produces nearly 3 billion crayons each year. So that's a lot of crayons. A pencil can write 45,000 words or draw a line 35 miles long and will write in zero gravity, upside down or underwater. Do you know, you look at a pencil, you don't realize how much it can do. That would be interesting. I wonder how they tested that out, that it could make a line 35 miles long. It would depend on how hard you press down.
Right, and how good your pencil sharpener is, too.
Yeah.
Because when you get down to that little one, it's pretty tough.
I remember being in school and having a few days and seeing other students have a few days where you got that little nub left, and you're trying to get everything you can out of that thing. Around 480,000 yellow school buses carry 25 million children to and from school every day. So it is that getting to be that time of year, close to it, when you do have to start planning when you're going to leave for work around the school buses. Because if you get stuck behind one of those, they're stopping every other house, and it's going to be a long journey. There's you nice, as you wave you on, say, go, you can go ahead. They say that in 2012, there were 78 million students enrolled in school from nursery to college. So that's pretty good amount. I mean, you consider the U.S. has got, like, what, 330 million people? Something like that. So not quite a third, but almost in school. So school time coming up again. And Abraham, you're going to be teaching a couple of classes over at the Imperial Academy here that's on the campus of Herbert W. Armstrong College. A history class and a geography class, is that right?
Yes, yep. Yeah, it's grade 7 geography and grade 9 history.
There you go. Take that as a warning. Here are some of the headlines that are happening around the world today. We're going to talk about this one a little more in our second segment, but just to give you the headline. And this is probably the big headline of the day. This is from Newsmax. They're quoting Wall Street Journal. They say, Wall Street Journal says Obama paid $400 million in cash to Iran as it released Americans. So there's some new information out about this. The Obama White House airlifted $400 million worth of foreign cash to Iran just as Iran released four Americans it had been holding in prison. The money was flown in secretly on wooden pallets in an unmarked cargo plane, but none of the cash was U.S. dollars. Instead, they had euros, Swiss francs, and other currencies. They were withdrawn from central banks in the Netherlands and Switzerland. So now that this information's coming out, the White House says, oh, that had nothing to do with the hostages. We just were making a payment we needed to make to them. The Republicans are saying, oh, come on now. That's ridiculous. And my thought is, okay, if it's no big deal and it's not a secret, why did you sneak it in on an unmarked plane, on a wooden pallet, and no U.S. currency? There's too many question marks there.
Yeah, this is a scene right out of a ransom movie. You think, like, unmarked planes, foreign currency, so it doesn't can't be tracked in the U.S., all that stuff. It's, yeah, it just seems a little, well, more than coincidence. And some congressmen have been pushing to know about this money for a while because some documents were finally released, and I guess the administration refused to explain what it was for a long time. So now that it's out there, I mean, it's laughable that John Kerry and the president came out and said, like, well, we secured the release of the sailors because of our good diplomatic relations.
Yeah.
It's like, well, if good diplomatic relations is sending unmarked cargo plane with $400 million, then that's what it is, I guess.
I have a prediction. It'll fall out of the headlines today and you won't hear much about it again.
Right.
Because there's so much more important news they must cover. Like evaluating the mental status of Donald Trump.
Right.
That's a headline today. And again, if you have somebody running for the highest office in the land, yeah, you should certainly vet them. You know, why not start now at least? Because it certainly didn't do it a few years back. But it's interesting to see how a story like this is very important, very important. And I would think based upon what's happened in the past, it'll just roll through its media cycle. If it's brought up again, it'll be kind of ridiculed and they'll move on to something else. But it's a big story. But I just don't think they don't get to the bottom of anything. Because in this story from Newsmax, they say, well, the White House said this. Well, somebody else said that. Okay, well, are we going to do an investigation, find out who's telling the truth, or just not? Let it ride.
Right. Yeah, it strikes me as very similar to Iran-Contra, the scandal under Reagan, where Reagan wasn't involved with it, but certain people took his directives on helping the Contras in Nicaragua and they started sending them cash under the table to help them out. And they did so illegally, and Oliver North and all of them were in that. And this is even more scandalous in my opinion. And yet it just moves on, and no consequences, no inquiries, or even if there is a scandal, they can say, like, well, no one remembers who we telephoned to do that order, so no one can be prosecuted.
Yeah, it was the fault of the guy flying the cargo plane, but we don't know who he was. See, I can write speeches, too. Here's another headline. Interesting. This is also from Newsmax. It says, Iran bent on destabilizing the Middle East. This isn't a surprise if you read thetrumpet.com or any or the Trumpet magazine or listen to the programming here in KPCG. We've been talking about this for a long time. But and it's known. This article points out the intelligence community knows. They know what Iran's doing. It's not a secret. but this author points out that that's the crazy thing about it is that the intelligence community knows that Iran, as he says, is bent on destabilizing the Middle East. Their main goal is to get the U.S. and Israel out. And but yet the U.S. still, you know, makes this nuclear deal with them, which has been revealed lately that they can have, they could have a weapon within several years, and they have a breakout time of like 6 months, which is not what they were talking about. They were talking about the deal at like, well, they'll never get a weapon. That's why we're making this deal, which isn't the case. So this is just a really interesting write-up, and they go into quite a bit of detail about what's going on. But they say from financial assistance to providing a sanctuary for 9/11 planners, from promoting the death of innocents to violent jihad, Iran is terrorist central. And Gerald Fleury has been talking about that for years. Most interesting, of course, is despite the adherence to Shiite principles, the Iranian government is most interested in uniting with Sunni groups in order to promote a national and globalist agenda. That the U.S. is indirectly complicit, he says indirectly, but indirectly complicit with Iran through the nuclear deal, and the war against ISIS, that will at some point come back to haunt America. So he's saying, and I don't know if this is exactly right, but this is his take on it, that even though Iran and some of the people there in the Middle East, there's different religious ideologies to a point, Sunni and Shiite, they're willing to get everybody together as long as they can get America and Israel out. Like, even though they don't agree, they have a common hatred for Israel and the U.S.
Right. Yeah, this is really interesting because it really does show there's a different fabricated political narrative we've been hearing for a long time in the media, and then there's the actual facts that are starting to come up more. And one of those is that, like they said, Iran is trying to build an empire, essentially, as much as they can. They can't do that without the help of the Sunnis, because there are more Sunnis in the world than Shiites as well. So they need the help of the opposing political religious faction. And there's a long history of whenever in the Islamic world, they're always divided on these lines. They fight each other. But when there's a foreign enemy, they'll unite as long as necessary to overcome them. That happened in the war in Iraq, too. Still going on. And what makes it more feasible, too, is that ISIS and other terrorist groups are not a nation. They're a group of people, and ISIS has its roots in Iran, in different countries before they declared themselves the caliphate a few years ago. So they have a lot of ties with each other, and these terrorist groups aren't nations. They're organizations that can be affiliated with anyone they want. And so it makes sense that they would unite against the United States and the Jews in the Middle East there to try to destroy them. Because those are the same goals the Sunnis have too, those radical organizations. So as long as those are the purposes, they'll fight with each other. But as soon as that's done, it could disintegrate, I don't know. But Iran's being very effective in this, and President Obama's whole strategy of balancing Sunnis versus Shiites in the Middle East is falling apart because they do unite.
The writer here on this Newsmax piece, he starts with a really interesting, I guess it's a joke. It's not really that funny, but they call it a joke. And it's common, he said, in Israel. And the story goes like this. There's two taxi drivers, and they come to an impasse on a single road. And the first driver says, "Hey, get out of my way." And the second driver says, "No, you get out of my way." So they get into a fight. And so the first cab driver gets out of the cab, and he goes to the other cab, and there happens to be a Jew in the back of the cab. So he goes in and he beats up the Jew. The other taxi driver gets out of his cab and walks over to the other guy's cab, and there's a Jew in the back of that seat as well. So they beat up that Jew also. The moral of the story is basically that you can look at that like Sunni and Shiite. Yeah, they're mad at each other. There's an impasse, but they're beating up the Jews. They have that common goal. So kind of an interesting story, and I think because the Middle East can kind of seem a little bit complex and like a quagmire in a way, but I thought that was an interesting story, or, you know, he says a joke there to just illustrate that. Yeah, they don't, Sunni and Shiite, they don't get along, but they really agree on a couple of things, and that is we hate the Jews, we hate Israel, we hate the U.S., and so I thought that was a pretty good story to highlight that situation. And like you said, the political narrative in this country is some sort of an odd, Iran will kind of be our friends, maybe. Maybe they'll help us stabilize the Middle East. But even that to me is unclear. I'm not exactly clear what they're even saying about Iran.
Yeah, it's kind of this ambiguous, we made a deal with them, but they don't say if they're an ally or an enemy. It's this third state frenemy, state of
right,
if I can use that word in a more technical way. But I like that the taxi story slash joke, just because it really, and that's kind of what Benjamin Netanyahu's been trying to deal with, because if the U.S. loses, it doesn't matter who else wins, Israel loses. Basically, yeah. Whoever wins in the Middle East, Israel will lose, unless it's the United States.
Yeah, it's interesting over there, and Brent Noctegal talks about that area. He's over there, of course, in Jerusalem, and he's actually in Edstone, England for a while at our sister campus over there, and he's doing the duty today on the Trump Daily Radio Show, so we'll talk about that in a little bit. Another headline, Chicago, they're supposed to be this gun control haven, right? Deadliest July in 10 years. 65 individuals were shot and killed in July. And if you just think about the major terrorist attacks that we've seen recently and the numbers, this isn't that far from it. I mean, if you look at Orlando and then if you look at Nice, this is pretty close. This would be right in the middle. 65 killed in July alone in one city in the U.S.
Yeah, this is disturbing, and I think it's a clear sign of we're on a tipping point between losing control and because it always comes a point where you either take drastic action or you lose control of everything because it gets too big and it's too far gone to salvage. And that's what we're starting to see with the inner cities and the violence, urban violence, because 65 in 1 month, what are those numbers going to look like at the end of the year?
Yeah.
I mean, that's almost 800 people if we go through the rest of the months, like, and then if the months previous were that much, I don't know what the other months were, but I mean, that's almost 1,000 people in one city dying a year. I mean, that's, you see that in third world countries and nations who are fighting with each other or have more strife, not supposed to be the world leader in freedom and security.
Yeah, those are pretty startling numbers. This is an interesting headline here as well. This just came across not too long ago. There is a D.C. transit D.C. transit officer. He's been charged with aiding ISIS. This is the first instance of this that is known anyway. The first case of a U.S. police officer charged with aiding ISIS, a Washington Metropolitan Area Transit Authority cop, was arrested Wednesday for providing material support to ISIS, according to two law enforcement officials. Nicholas Young was arrested by the FBI following more than a year of investigation. According to the officials, there was no evidence of any threat to the D.C. metro system. Young will make his first appearance in court later Wednesday. He would be the first police officer in the United States arrested and charged with supporting ISIS. It has not been a good year for the police, and this doesn't help.
Yeah, this complicates it a lot more. And it creates a lot more distrust and gives more credence to the government's plan to have more federal intervention in law enforcement, too. I don't know all the details, and I'm sure as the trial goes on, everything will find out more details about what happened. But I think a lot of people assume this sort of thing goes on, that ISIS is trying, or other organizations are trying to subvert the United States or plan attacks. But when it's a law enforcement official, someone who's taken an oath to defend the country, it is a little more disturbing. And if there are more come out too in the rest of the year, it could cause a lot of trouble.
That's they've had a few officials over in Europe that have been caught, haven't they? Didn't that Brussels airport bombing, wasn't there somebody involved there?
I think
that,
so.
That worked there for a time, and he actually was a member. I can't remember. I'm not getting all, there's too many attacks to keep in mind, sadly. But it seems like that's happened in other nations, so that does get to be a little disconcerting. It is interesting how they said there's no threat to the D.C. metro system, and that may be true, but I'm sure they're also saying that to just kind of keep people calm to some extent. Here's a headline that's a little more, I don't know, not as serious, but kind of ridiculous. This is from Portland. You ever been to Portland?
Yes, once.
Yeah, it's kind of a very liberal city and been known to just accept a lot of different things. There's a show called Portlandia that sort of mocks their that city and what they do. And I don't know, kind of in an endearing way, I guess. They're kind of supporting it, too. I'm not sure. Anyway, Portland is known as being a little bit out there in some ways. Portland ends pilot safe sleeping policy immediately. The mayor of Portland, Charlie Hales, on Tuesday announced the end of a pilot program that allowed homeless people to sleep on the streets undisturbed by law enforcement. So they made this rule, and they said the homeless can sleep pretty much on the streets. We'll leave you alone. But people got confused, and they thought it was you could camp anywhere you wanted at any time.
Right.
Like they had a hard time differentiating between homeless and people that were just camping. So they had to immediately end the law. They immediately ended the safe sleeping policy. So I guess what replaces it? The unsafe sleeping policy?
Right. Yeah, or possibly get disturbed sleeping policy.
Disturbed sleeping policy. So, yeah, it's just one of those things where they were trying to, I guess, solve a problem, and then it was people liked it, and then people that actually have homes wanted to just sleep out on the street too. So what are you going to do?
Yeah, a bit of a, I guess that's role playing, or well, I don't know. There's other words for it too, I guess. But yeah, I don't know. Odd. I mean, I think lots of cities try to come up with creative ways to deal with how to treat the homeless, how to make them comfortable, but also not disturb everyone else. And so there are a lot of unique ideas out there. This is one of them. But I've never heard of people who have a home, a solid house, just camping in Portland of all places, random areas.
The solution is right in front of their face. Just have them switch.
Right.
The homeless people can sleep in the homes of the people that are out camping.
That's right.
Everyone can have a safe sleep. I should be the mayor of Portland.
That's right.
I just solved their entire problem. We have some listeners in Portland on kpcg.fm, so feel free to call the mayor if you'd like to. Propose it, see what happens. This is another interesting headline. You ever see that show America's Got Talent?
Yes.
It should be a question mark at the end of that, I think.
Right.
Because some people are talented, and then there's just some really bizarre things that happen. Well, some of the acts are kind of death-defying, but they usually succeed, but they did not succeed last night, or I guess it was here recently. This guy, he swallows things, which is, I can't watch that. That just grosses me out.
Right.
But anyway, so his act was to swallow different things, and then he had an assistant, who I believe is his fiance, shoot arrows. Like he would have a target that was in front of his mouth, and she'd shoot a flaming arrow, and she missed, and she hit him in the collarbone. And so he was okay eventually, but it was one of those acts where it went wrong and everyone knew it. So anyway, when you're watching those, if you do watch some of those acts, things could go wrong. I mean, it is dangerous stuff. And if it would have been, you know, even a little bit higher, it could have killed him. It would have hit him in the throat, hit him in the collarbone. So he got bruised pretty good, but he didn't get killed.
Yeah, well, especially if it's a flaming arrow. I mean,
Gotta raise the stakes, yeah.
But yeah, I think on talent shows like that, from what I've read, what the trend of them, I mean, there's singing and there's the classic talents that maybe we're used to seeing on those kind of shows. But people are starting to have to get more extreme and more spectacular. And so they're doing more lethal things like that. And yeah, I mean, a good thing it's not a live show. At least I don't think it's live.
I think it actually, it gets to a point where it is.
Right, the finals, I guess.
Right, I always wonder when you see some of these people, you think, how did you figure out you could do that? Like,
right.
what sequence of events led you to think, you know what I could do? Just trying really bizarre things.
Yeah, I watched one on, I think it was Britain's Got Talent, where he had an arrow and he was shooting at different things, and he was shooting at targets blindfolded, and then he shot one at someone with an apple on their head. No, he was standing there with the apple on his head, and his girlfriend or wife, whoever she was, shot an arrow off his head with a bow and arrow. And I don't know. Just seems
it
like...
It was successful, obviously?
Yes.
Yeah,
and the judges liked it, apparently. Because, I mean, if that guy did it successfully, he could make money off of that. But at the same time, it's this, I don't know. Some things aren't worth the reward.
Yeah. So, and anyway, sometimes those things, sometimes you look at it and you think, well, it's that staged. But no, I mean, a lot of it is real and it can be pretty dangerous. Those are some of the headlines for today. The Key David program is coming up here in a bit on KPCG. One of the programs today is on the Geneva Nuclear Agreement, really important, especially in light of some of the headlines today. So make sure you listen for that. Also, the Trumpet Daily Radio Show with your host, Brent Nachtigall. He's in Edstone, England, over there for, I guess, the youth camp they're having. And he talked about how Iran is once again threatening the Straits of Hormuz. We mentioned a little bit about that last week. This had happened before in 1988, but now it would be much more difficult for the United States to break the blockade on the choke point. Ever since the nuclear deal, Iran has had more cash to invest in sophisticated Russian military hardware, such as surface-to-air missiles and anti-air defense systems. America's regional superiority is quickly eroding and opening the door for Iran to grab more power. A great deal of oil passes through Hormuz, and if this was cut off, it would cause a grave oil crisis in Europe. At the moment, the U.S. has a surplus of oil, and so the impetus to stop the blockade might emanate from Europe and not America. This would be another example of Europe really getting pushed around by Iran.
Yeah, I think this is a great example of seeing the effects of an American withdrawal from the world, because all these different nations, Europe, you can go down the list, any nation you want, really, they were able to have a smaller military and not to have an army at areas where that's important to them, because the U.S. protected everyone's interests, friend and enemy, because they kept the sea lanes open. They guaranteed your right to have an economy and trade with people. But now that America is starting to withdraw and they're giving more power to other nations like China, Iran, those are the two big examples, we're starting to see the effects of that, and that is these nations using those choke points to manipulate other nations in the world. And we haven't seen that because the U.S. has done such a good job of protecting those sea lanes for everyone. But now that's eroding, and it's going to force other nations to take military action.
Yeah, something to definitely watch over there in that part of the world. Also, Brent Nachtigall talks about the first Philistine cemetery has been found in Israel. You might have seen this in the headlines recently. And this archaeological discovery has helped to verify the biblical account. The different items discovered reveal a civilization that mirrors the accounts of Israel's struggles with the Philistines anciently. This is an exciting find that will help expand our knowledge on an ancient civilization and also help establish that King David was the man written about in the Bible. So archaeology becomes pretty exciting, and it comes to life when it really makes the Bible come to life as well. And I suppose that's always a little bit of a debate in the archaeology world, is the Bible's record fact or fiction. But more and more, these discoveries are showing that, in fact, it is fact.
Yeah, near the end of that segment, he makes some really great points on how just in the past 20 years, we found more about King David's, the biblical account of King David in archaeology than ever before, with different finds. And the Philistine one is so important because in the Bible, the Philistines are David's main adversary. And Saul, that the Iron Age time period around the 1000 BC, when David was alive and king. And that's probably one of the most contested points in the Bible of what was he actually, was David, King David real? Was he actually what the Bible says he was? And these finds are actually proving that the Philistines were a pretty mighty people. So it would have taken a mighty king to defeat them. And that's why these finds are important. I mean, it's fascinating to learn about the Philistines as well. But it's, I think a more value is in it, is when you can connect it with everything else around it too. And that is, they have a big connection with Israel.
Really interesting topic today on the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Make sure you listen for that. And we have some replays throughout the day. You can find the schedule online at kpcg.fm along with the podcast of that program.